Welcome to the Head Trash Show. My name is Alexia Leachman and I'm the founder of Head Trash, home to the new and unique Head Trash Clearance Method that removes unwanted negative thoughts, feelings and emotions quickly and effectively so that you can achieve clarity, confidence and contentment in your life. My goal with this podcast is to teach you how to create some headspace by helping you to unpick what's blocking you and sharing some tips and how-tos for clearing it. Tune in every week as I share simple strategies to help you to achieve confidence and clarity in your life and business. To find out how to clear your head trash quickly and effectively using our unique method, pop over to headtrash.com to get our free download and subscribe for our free head trash clearance updates. And now for the show. Hello and welcome back to the Head Trash Show. This is me, your host, Alexia Leachman, and thank you so much for joining me today. Now, today's show is going to be mainly focused around talking around the fear of public speaking. And the reason I picked public speaking as something to tackle is that, well, it's something that's very, very common and it can hold a lot of people back from doing stuff that's really going to help them move themselves forward in life. And so, but also the thing about public speaking is it's really irrational. You know, people have got this fear and yet you can't actually die from it. But it is actually the number one fear here in the UK. So it all seems a little bit bonkers. So I thought it would be a really good idea to just tackle that and try and unpick it. And so to help me do that, I've actually got an expert on board to help me. And that's Nigel Risner. So we're going to be talking to Nigel in a moment. But before I hand over to the chat that I had with Nigel, just a couple of things that I want to go through with you beforehand. Now, I want to find out how you got on with the freebie that I let you have last week. Now, if you listen to last week's show, which was all about helping you to clear procrastination, I did say during the show that I was giving away a little bit of a freebie. So, did you get it and how was it? I actually emailed a free audio session out to the people on my list to help you to get over your feelings of overwhelm when it comes to you maybe feeling overwhelmed about how much you've got to do or how big your to-do list is. You know, all that kind of rabbit in headlights, panicky feeling that you might get that stops you from actually getting on with stuff. And that can lead to procrastination. And a lot of people did click and download it. So I want to hear from you. How did you get on? What shifts have you noticed? Please come and let me know because I really want to find out. Now, also, I've got a little bit of a quick announcement is that I decided last minute to put on an event in Manchester here in the UK next weekend, which is October the 5th. It's a Saturday and I'm going to run a half day event. And the reason I'm doing this so last minute, which is incredibly badly organised of me, I know, but it's because I've got some last minute childcare that's come up, which means I can actually run a weekend event. And that is it. I'm serious, totally honest. And because I've been getting so many emails from you asking me when I'm doing another event and people saying, hey, there's no events on your website. What's going on? When's the next event? I thought, right, I need to just get an event out there quickly. And I got an opportunity. So I know it's just over a week away, but that doesn't matter, right? So it's only half a day. You don't have to find a lot of time in your diary. And it's going to be in Manchester City Centre. The actual location is still TBC because I'm still trying to sort it out. But I will let you know. But it'll be a city centre location. So if you want to come along and have a go at clearing some head trash using the technique, being there with me so I can actually help you to hone it. You can practice it while I'm there. We can get some good unpicking of your head trash done as well. It'd be a nice intimate group. So if you want to come along and have a go in a nice supportive environment to clear some of your head trash, then pop along to the website at headtrash.co.uk and you can find out all the details there. And you can actually book online there too. So I just wanted to let you guys know. I'm actually going to be in Manchester twice next week, which is a bit weird because I'm doing a talk in front of, I've been booked for a talk in front of 120 people on Head Trash too. So I'm going to be there twice. What's that about? Anyway, back to today's show. So today's show is all about public speaking and the fear of it. I know that, you know, I do a lot of public speaking now, but certainly earlier on in my public speaking career, and, you know, even now I get a little bit nervous just before stepping out, but it really is something that can hold people back a lot. And so I really wanted to try and tackle this one, hence me getting an expert. Now, I've been really lucky to get Nigel on the call. I happen to be a member of the Professional Speaking Association, and they are an incredibly supportive group. And if you do want to start a career in public speaking, then I would urge you to join and become a member, because they really are like a big family that will help you get over all your stuff that can get in the way of having a great speaking career. And so when I went to them and said, hey, I'd really like to have an expert on to help me to unpick the fear of public speaking, I couldn't believe how many people jumped in and offered. And one of those was Nigel Risner. So hence getting him on the call. Now, Nigel has been a professional speaker for many, many years, and he's been paid to speak over 3,000 times or something like that. So this guy knows what he's talking about. But more importantly for me is that he helps other people to get over their fear of public speaking. So he deals with people time and time again that are struggling with it. And he's got real insight into what it is that is feeding that fear, but more importantly, how to get people to get over it and move past it. And he works a lot with CEOs that have to do the annual general meeting, which can't be the easiest of speaking jobs to do, I don't think. So Nigel has got loads and loads of insights to share with you. Now, just before I hand over to the time that I spoke to Nigel, I just want to let you know that anything that he mentions during the chat around specifically the head trashy stuff and the fear stuff, where I think you can actually take that and get rid of it with our technique, then I'm just going to recap about that stuff at the very end. So stick around until the end, and I'm going to try and summarize what he said and how you can start to get rid of that stuff using our technique, so that you can leave after listening to this podcast, you can literally go away and start clearing your own head trash around public speaking. So stick around for that. But here is the time that I spoke to Nigel about how to get rid of your fears and be an awesome speaker. Hello, it's Alexi here, and welcome back to the Head Trash Show. Now, today I'm really, really excited because I've got Nigel Risner on the call. And Nigel is not only is he the author of The Impact Code, but he's also coached to CEOs and also the winner of the Award of Excellence for Professional Speaking. Did I get that right, Nigel?
Virtually, but it's a professional speaking award, one of six of us who've got it in Europe, so
fantastic.
I'm okay with that.
Thank you, and thank you so much for joining me today. Now, the reason I've got Nigel on the call today is because what I want to unpick today is the number one fear ever, which is the fear of public speaking. Now, given that you can't actually die from speaking, it's amazing that people have such a fear. So I thought it'd be really useful to really pull this apart. And who better else to join me do that than Nigel? Thank you for joining me today, Nigel.
Pleasure. Excited to be with you on this. And it's a topic that I love working on because, as with the exception of Tommy Cooper, no one has ever died on stage. So I don't think we've got anything to worry about for 60 million of us.
So what I like to do when we unpick head trash is really just to sort of start off with, you know, helping people to understand whether or not this is something that they do in fact suffer from. I mean, some people might actually think, well, yeah, I'm terrified of speaking to an audience, but there may be some other telltale signs that people have got an affliction of a fear of public speaking. So in your experience, what are the telltale signs of somebody that's got a terror or a fear of public speaking?
I actually don't believe people have a terror of public speaking, because any time you speak outside your house, it's public speaking. Mm. When you go to the supermarket and the supermarket attendant asks you, you know, is there anything else I can get you? Nobody panics in that moment of time. I think it's a fear of uncertainty. It's a fear of being out of control. And the real big one for me is that the audience might ask you a question you don't know the answer to. So it's a fear of not being in control. Because if the subject matter was something you were the world's number one at, you wouldn't have an issue. But our fear, I think, is that someone might know a bit more than you do, and they ask you a question in the middle of it, which throws you.
I certainly know that as I've done more speaking, the more confident I become in my material, the more confident I become in speaking. So I think there's a lot of truth of what you're saying there.
And also, the reason why they've asked you to speak is either that, you know, you're a friend at a wedding, you're a close business associate, or they think you've got some knowledge. They're not asking the local dustman to talk about nuclear physics, and they're not asking me to talk about dust collection in Outer Mongolia, because I don't know anything about it. The problem is, it's when you say, I think I can probably do that.
So is it maybe more to do with the idea of being in front of a lot of people Is that because some people do know their subject matter, and yet the minute you put them in front of an audience, that's when they start shaking their voice, you know, getting dry mouth and, you know, literally visibly shaking.
Okay, so when people get a dry mouth, that's normally about breathing.
Okay.
When people, and in more girls than boys, and this is not meant to be in any way sexist, but girls often get this red rash that appears on their neck because they're having problems controlling their blood flow because of temperature gauge. But it's amazing what a small amount of people or a large amount of people means. Mm. So I've spoken with groups between 5,000 and 6,500 people.
Mm.
When you speak in front of a group of 6 people, and I do a lot of chief exec work, it's quite intimidating because you're virtually on top of them and they're looking for you to be brilliant.
Mm.
When you're talking in front of 6,500 people, you can only see 50 of them because they're not even looking at you. They're looking at screens, which is more awkward. But it's interesting how there's a certain cutoff number where people go, I'm okay in front of a small group.
Mm.
I'm okay if we're sitting down. I'm okay if... And it's all these ifs. And then you say, so if there's 3 people and you know them, you're okay. But if it's 20 people and you don't know them, and then some people say, if I don't know them, I'm not nervous because then they don't know me.
Yeah.
So there's this whole balance because in 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time, I'm going to be speaking to my peer group of professional speakers. So here I am as a professional speaker talking to 200 professional speakers who are all going to be looking for every mistake that I make, every umlaut hesitation. But really, they just want my brilliance. That's why they've invited me there. And I'm sure my left hand will go in my pocket. I'm sure I would do a cardinal sin of doing the equivalent of a woman moving their bra strap, even though I don't wear a bra, but I'll have to readjust something.
So is that the telltale man sign then, putting your left hand in your pocket?
Yes, normally, because either you're getting excited or something's going on, I'm never quite sure. But you'll find women, within about 5 seconds of being on stage, move their bra strap. It doesn't move for about 3 weeks, but all of a sudden we've just got to do a bit of a readjustment just to make sure, to make ourselves feel secure. But it is interesting that in front of my own peer group, I'll probably be more nervous than in front of 6,500 people. Now, what's that about?
So what do you think that is about?
It's the pressure to appear good, in theory, in front of people who do what you do. Because everyone, you know, I've worked with comedians, I've worked with sports people, I've worked with chief execs. Everyone has one audience that they're not really enjoying. I love working with professional speakers, but it's interesting to go onto main stage, you're a main conference speaker, and they say, we've got Nigel Risner, the godfather of the PSA. You know, this build-up, well, then you better be good.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've never seen anybody from the Sleeping Bed Federation, and I've spoken to most associations somewhere in the world, I'm never going to meet them again. So for me, it's like, at the very worst, I'll mess up.
Okay, so you talked about this sort of fear of uncertainty and then all these conditions that people put in place. You know, well, if I know them or if I don't know them or if there's a small group, how do you help people? Because you help people with this, don't you? How do you help people deal with that kind of stuff?
Well, the very first thing I always want to get people to do is have a great opening line so they don't literally wet themselves. Because that waiting to speak and that pacing and that panting and I've got to get going. Because most people, once they get going, they're quite good.
Yeah.
It's getting the first line out. So I teach a lot of people to have a opening line that is phenomenal, whether it's a statement, a quote, a joke if you're funny. And I'm not, so I would never do a joke. But I have some funny stories or a guaranteed question that gives you a yes answer. So I have virtually used the same question to open up virtually every speech that I do every single time. And it's strange that when I don't do it, I fumble my first line and then I've got to recover and then I start to panic a bit. But when I do the line that I use, I've spoken, I don't know, 3,500 times professionally and been paid. When I do my line that I know works, the rest is easy. So I teach people, if you think about their hand, a great opening line that they can nail. Not, good morning, my name is Nigel, and I'm glad to be in Southampton. They know what time of day it is, they know what your name is, and they know where they are.
So what is your opening line? Can you share that with us?
Yes, so often I'll be introduced, and I will come straight on stage, breathe, look at the audience, and then ask, just by a show of hands, how many people in the room would like to have at least 5% more success in some area in your life?
Right. Okay.
And 99.9% of people will put their hands up. So I've now got automatic buy-in, and then I can continue my speech. If you try and be clever, and you think about, oh, just before I go on, won't it be funny if I say, isn't that a strange name Alexia's got? Because if you spell it backwards, it's like 18 letters in Scrabble. I haven't thought about it, so it sounds a bit naff, but people try and be really clever on the spot, and very few people are brilliant on the spot, because most comedians have practiced that opening line 50 million times. Nothing Michael McIntyre does is off the cuff. But it looks like it is.
Yeah. So that opening line, from your perspective, is a really great way of kind of anchoring that experience and almost telling your subconscious, your system, hey, right, we're on now, we're on, let's go. And then you can kind of park your fears, and it's a way of getting over it really quickly, is it?
And the audience buy into it, because 99.9% want at least 5% more success in some area in their life. So now I've got buy-in. They kind of go, well, if help us then. Tell us how we can do it.
Yeah.
I'm only going to go two stages further to help out. I then share, when I work with clients, you're only going to share three major points, okay, maximum. And then you're going to close with something brilliant, whether it's a call to action, a quote, a funny slide, a song, a poem, whatever. So great opening line, three key points, and a great close. That's the whole structure of your speech, whether you're speaking for a minute, half an hour, a day, 5 days.
Right, okay. So that sounds really easy and simple.
That's the whole point. The game then is get the first line right.
Yeah, okay.
If you get the first line right, you're halfway there. Then what are the three big messages you want to leave them with?
Okay.
You can then interweave stories, but I'm trying to share, I make it as simple as I possibly can. And then a great close.
Okay.
Something you're proud of. So when you walk off stage, they kind of go, wow, I got that.
Yeah. Like a lasting impression.
Yeah. So I sometimes have a self-deprecating joke. I have a great video clip about with two tortoises, or I do something quite spiritual, depending on the audience. But most people kind of go, I got that. Give them 27 points. They won't understand. They won't remember three.
Okay. So let me go back to, let's say, you know, somebody has got their opening line that they're really, they think that's the right line, but they're still, they're just a complete mess. Like the nerves are just getting too much. And some people, I've seen this and it's quite painful. They literally, their brain freezes and they can't seem to utter a word. What's your advice to people like that?
Okay, so let me go back a stage. If I was coaching you and you said, look, I've got this massive audience, but I'm really having issues because I'm nervous, I might do what's called a 5-minute phobia cure.
Okay.
Which would allow you just to calm your breathing down and get into a different state. So I'm not going to go NLP here.
No.
But I'm trying to get you to a place where, what's the worst that's going to happen? So have you ever had a fear of spiders, a fear of flying?
Yeah.
What do you have a fear of, for example?
Well, I used to have a fear of injections.
Okay, so let's use that as a moment. And you're telling me that next year you want to go to Kenya. See, if you're only ever going to go to Bognor for the rest of your life, then you're okay. And if you remember Dennis Bergkamp, the footballer, he never wanted to fly. So he couldn't be cured of his fear of flying. But if you want to go to Kenya and you need an injection, I could get you to a place within about 5 minutes to relax you enough to have an injection. I could get you relaxed enough to go on stage. You still may not enjoy it.
Okay.
But it depends whether you want to do it. If you hate speaking and you don't want to speak, you shouldn't speak.
Now, what about, there's an interesting debate that I've been observing on the Professional Speaking Association Facebook group recently about the whole idea of introverts and whether introverts can be really great on stage. And some people confuse introversion with maybe lacking in confidence or being shy. Have you got any, what's your take on the whole introvert, extrovert being good on stage?
I think you've got to want to go on stage. That's part of the issue. So if you don't like speaking in public, but you're quite bright and you've got a good memory, you can get away with it. But if you really hate people and you don't like speaking and you've got a very soft voice and you don't know your subject and your worst nightmare is more than six people, why would you put yourselves there? There's other ways to get your message across, whether it's by doing social media, whether it's by being a journalist, whether it's doing a blog. But if you're going to put yourself out there, why are you doing it? What's the purpose? What's the call to action you want? You know, if I work with enough CEOs who have to do the the big statement once a year. They have to do their rally call to get the troops online. And often I'm saying to them, then share some of your stuff. Just share a personal story that lets people know you're human.
Mm.
Because they've got the figures. There's very little most people share on financial facts that I couldn't find out.
Mm.
By the time it's on stage, someone must have written them. So you could have sent them to me in advance.
Mm.
There's very few news information conferences that someone couldn't find the information out. So there's energy, there's passion. So if you really are introvert, you hate being with more than two people, you're going to struggle.
Mm.
And I don't care what course you go on, you'll go on the course and enjoy it, but why would you want to put yourselves in front of that group?
Mm.
However, shy people, by doing it a bit more, get better. So the idea of practice makes perfect is not fair.
Okay.
This is going to really rock you here. Perfect practice makes perfect speeching.
Perfect practice. What's
the new one? Do you play the piano?
A long time ago, not anymore.
Do you play the harp?
No.
Okay, well, practicing won't help very much unless you're practicing it perfectly.
Okay.
So if you can't play the harp, practicing the harp isn't going to help.
Yeah.
If you don't enjoy speaking, you're not a very good speaker, practicing speaking isn't going to get you there.
No.
You've got to be good at it or want to be good at it and then do baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you good at? Is it a small group? Is it Skype call? Because some people like Skype because they can see one or two people, but they can still fidget under the table and no one knows what's going on and they're happy. But for most people, when they're introverts, there's a fear people are looking at them. There's a fear they may look silly. Right. There's a fear for them of. And it goes way back to when they were 6 or 7 years old for most people.
So, yeah, that's an interesting point. Now, where does this fear come from, this fear of public speaking? Is it because we all get humiliated at school having to read out a story? Or is that where
it's not
from?
We all get humiliated, but some people do. Or that was never their thing, you know. Can you remember your very first experience of going to the blackboard where someone asked you to write down 7 times 7, you got it wrong.
Mm.
So then you started realizing the best way never to get that humiliation is don't volunteer.
Mm.
So most people have messed up. Or English literature, you're going to read a line from, I remember as a young child doing English literature and we were reading, I think, Othello, and the whole class laughed at me.
Mm.
I was so ignorant, I didn't know they were laughing at me.
Mm.
But if I'd have been self-conscious, I'd never have spoken again.
So it's how we interpret what's happening to us as well and what the value we place on that experience.
And most other people who laugh at you are just laughing at themselves thinking, thank God it wasn't me.
Yeah. So you've given me some really good things that you help your clients with in terms of getting them to do the baby steps, giving them a really strong opening line and just making sure that they want to do it and they're talking about something that they actually know about. And that you help the CEOs share personal stories. Now, the one thing that came to me is, what about people that worry that they haven't got a very clear voice and they're not going to be heard? And I've heard something recently saying that some people that speak quite quietly on stage actually get a lot more attention because people kind of lean forward and have to be really quiet and listen more. What do you think about that, that whole idea of volume and speaking quietly?
The whole idea of the storyteller is to draw people in.
Mm.
If you speak at a volume like this all the time for 2 hours, it's quite hard.
Mm.
If you're softly spoken all the way, people don't quite get it. But, you know, tonality is very important.
Mm.
You know, you bring in some emotion into a story. You talk about being in the story, not about the story. You know, there's some technical facts here.
Mm.
But often, if they know their first line and they want to share something because there's a reason. So I've worked with charity workers who want to be able to get people to pledge money. Now, most people don't enjoy asking people for money.
Mm.
Unless there's a big enough why.
Yeah.
So we have a very big Jewish festival coming up. There's going to be a very big pledge in the synagogues right at the beginning of a fast. It's very interesting. People have been fasting about 10 minutes and they're already starving. It's bizarre. And there's a very big pledge. It's the biggest one of the year in the Jewish calendar. And I've worked with people saying, why should they be giving money? You know, what's the story?
Mm.
You know, if you think about the Middle East or whatever it could be, but get them to think about right now you're sitting in comfort. Right now, you're sitting here listening. You've just had a hot meal. You're only going to struggle for another 23 hours. There are people out there who could wait 25 days for a meal.
Mm.
And so there's a bit about why you're sharing the story. If there's no purpose, you're just reading someone else's words, it's difficult. I've never wanted to be a trainer for someone else because I'd never want to do someone else's script. So I wouldn't want to be an actor because I'm reading someone else's script day after day. So every presentation that I do is different because I can't remember what I said anyway. but I'm with the audience, but I have a structure. I know my opening line. So I wrote a book called The Impact Code. There are six parts to it as a mnemonic, but three are major in my speech. And then I close with something that's meaningful for the room. The rest is coachable, but you've got to have something to work on. And if you don't want to speak, then you're going to struggle because you don't really want to be there.
So back to the, you know, other things that people worry about when they're doing public speaking, you know, maybe they're worried that they kind of lose their train of thought and then they have a bit of a pause, and that idea that some people just fill the silence. And actually, maybe it's a good thing to allow that silence to sit there, because you can pause for effect, can't you? I mean, what's your thoughts around that?
One of my best bits of feedback I was ever given was a chief exec came up to me at the end of the session. He said, "I know we booked you to speak for 2 hours. You didn't have to speak for the 2 hours." I'd literally spoken for 1 hour, 59 minutes, 59 seconds, forgetting that people need time to breathe and think. And it was one of the best ever bits of feedback for me. Because as a speaker, you don't want there to be silence until you realise that silence is a very powerful tool. So when you ask a question to the audience and you let it sit with them, and there are times where I forget completely where I am. Do you remember the comedian Billy Connolly?
Yeah.
So Billy Connolly would start a story about being in Scotland. He then travelled to Australia and he's totally left the story over here, but he was brilliant at coming back to Scotland. Sometimes I start a story about leaving London, I have no idea where I am, but I can't remember where I was. And I often say to the audience, "Can anyone remember where I was going with this?" And what they find amazing is that I'm human and that I'm not perfect. But our fear is we think we need to be perfect. So I'm very lucky. I make hundreds of mistakes. I've never done a perfect speech.
But you don't allow it to floor you in the moment, which I think is probably a good piece of advice, isn't it?
Don't get me wrong, it slightly annoys me. I'm thinking, I know I started in London, I must be going somewhere on this journey. Does anybody know where I was going? Because I'm so in the moment with my story, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the audience kind of go, "I've done that." And at the very worst, I'll get it in a minute. But it's not beating yourself up. You know, when you look at President Obama, do you remember his inauguration speech when he first became president? That was written for him by a 26-year-old. He never wrote those words.
Amazing.
Yes, but the guy wrote the words to hit all four of the, you know, the science categories of left brain, right brain, animation, you know, the heavy hitters, the finance people. And it was beautifully constructed. And he didn't just look at it 4 minutes before he went on stage. If the President of America needs someone to write their speeches for, and we're doing it ourselves, we need to give ourselves a bit of a break. People have to remember, if you've got a message, people want you to be good. Have you ever been in a conference thought, "I hope the speaker's bad"? But our fear is they're going to think we're bad. The audience are desperate for you to be good.
And there's a really great TED Talk that's gone viral by Brené Brown, all about, you know, the power of vulnerability.
I went to see her speak 2 weeks ago.
Did you? She's amazing. I'm in the middle of reading her book and it's just phenomenal. She's brilliant. And I think a lot of people, if you haven't seen the TED Talk, then go and have a look, because there is a lot of power in vulnerability, and it's about framing
vulnerability. You want to see her second speech, which is even better.
Is it really? Which one was
what? Yes, because her second speech is, she wants to get the first speech back because she's really nervous that people know she's been vulnerable.
Right.
And she thinks only 400 or 500 people have seen it, not realising they've now got to 24 million.
Yeah.
But even when she spoke in public, she made some mistakes. I'm so excited when someone else makes mistakes. She was wearing jeans. She wasn't polished. But she was beautifully spoken. Her soul was stunning. She's not the best speaker in the world, but she kept my attention for the most time ever.
And that's about authenticity and integrity.
There's the key word.
Yeah.
Do you get the other person? Is it them? Or is it someone else's story? So do you know the starfish story?
No, I don't. Tell me the starfish story.
Okay. Well, it's not one of mine, but a lot of speakers will start by saying, you know, "I saw this man walking along the beach and I saw a starfish. And this man was throwing them back into the sea." And eventually, you know, the line is, "Why are you throwing it back in? There's millions. It won't make a difference to the starfish." A guy picks up and throws it into the sea and says, "But it made a difference to this one." That works to an audience who have never heard the story. But millions of people have heard that story. And you know it's not their story. But, you know, I have a son with mild cerebral palsy. I've got a wife who's a clinical psychotherapist. I've got a daughter who's done the TV program Shipwrecked, etc. I've got a lot of stories that are just mine. They can't be anyone else's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people love when I share one of my own stories that's either funny, sad, because it's me. But there's a business message I've got to get across. But when you leave that core message, just to say, I've had tough times as well, they want to know you've been there.
I've heard someone say that they, you know, when you're delivering a speech or speaking, every point needs a story and every story needs a point. You know, if you're going to start sharing stories, don't just, why is the story there? It needs the purpose. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes and no. That's going really highbrow technical.
Oh, is it?
Because if I had to think that every point that I make has to have a story, I probably don't do that.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example. Can you see what I'm doing here? Point your fingers out.
Yeah. Yeah.
See what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Do it with me.
He's pointing his finger, everyone.
Now make a circle with your finger.
Yeah.
Now put it to your chin.
Okay.
Put it to your chin. Yeah, well, see, you followed me, didn't you? That you just modelled badly. And what I'm saying is, I don't need to do a whole story about it. I've made a point. Yeah. The audience got it.
Yeah.
But if you're saying I've got to relate a whole story about modelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. People should. But if you're clever enough and it's very clear what the point was, you don't have to labour a whole story about pick up rubbish on the route to the toilet, because if you don't, the other staff don't. They know what you mean.
Yeah.
So sometimes people do a story because I think the audience are ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
I think the audience are quite bright.
Mm-hmm.
If I can make them laugh, they'll remember. If I can make them think deeply, they'll remember. If they can visualise, they'll remember. And if they can experience my speech, they'll definitely remember. Having a great story sometimes is the speaker's, they're a little glory trip. Because there are some fantastic storytellers.
So what makes a good storyteller, in your opinion?
Okay, I'm going to be really, really non-PC here. Irish people, they're great at storytelling. They are. You know, a lot of the Irish comedians do a great story. Mm. Jack Canfield, who writes the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, if you've ever seen, he was my original coach, is a great storyteller. I'm not, but I've got anecdotal stories of things that have happened to me.
Right.
So if you want to do an elaborate 11-minute story to find a point, great. But audiences haven't got that time.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can make the point in under 7 seconds, I will.
Mm. Okay. So just thinking back to the whole fear of public speaking, how to really come over that, just sort of wrap this up, what would be the best things that work for your clients when you're helping them to get over that thing that gives
them
that fear?
Do you want to speak is number one.
Okay.
Two, do you know what you want to, what message you want them to hear?
Mm.
So I often used to joke, there's the message I think I'm going to deliver, the message I delivered, the message they heard, the message they thought they heard, and the message I wanted them to hear. So what do you want to leave with if they were only going to leave with three things?
Okay.
Are you passionate about it? If you don't enjoy it, you're not good at it, be really careful about doing it. If you're not passionate about it, don't speak about it. But here's the really big one.
Mm.
Finish 1 minute early.
Ah.
Nobody's ever going to complain if you're a minute early. But a minute late is a problem. I can guarantee my audience, if I'm doing a pre-dinner speech, they can ladle the soup after 52 minutes and 40 seconds. No, but it could be lunch or people have to go to the toilet.
Mm.
If it's a coffee break, I'll finish on time.
Mm.
Even if I'm given less time, I will still make sure we finish on time.
Because ultimately, you'll get great feedback for that, won't you? And that feedback's going to boost your confidence as well. So it's all about creating a great experience for the audience in every way.
And also feeling like you've done a good job.
Yeah.
I don't want feedback. I want feed forward, because that's the big fear for speakers. They're going to get what we call feedback.
Right.
What you should have done.
Okay.
Well, I can't have done it differently. What I can do is next time make it even better. So most speakers do not want feedback. Because the minute you hear it's feedback, you know it's criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our biggest fear.
And I guess one of the things we didn't touch on is, you know, before you deliver your talk, is making sure that you get there nice and early so that you, none of this, the technology can't get in the way. You're not still trying to connect the screen to your computer.
Okay, so here, let's do this quickly in 8 seconds. Turn up so you're not running in late.
Yeah.
Turn up so you know where the audience is. Turn up so you know how the stage works. Turn up so you can try with your slides, and turn up so you go to the toilet first.
Yeah.
You know, there are many speakers that have got there literally 8 seconds before. The slides don't quite work because it's a Mac, not a PC. They don't know where their light is. They don't know where they should be standing. They don't know where their sound is. And they're 1, 2, testing, 1, 2. You don't want to be doing that.
Yeah.
And then the last one is, can you hear me? Oh, my God. You know, we're in the 21st century. They should be able to hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all this stuff that you shared with me today, Nigel. I really, really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Before we go, do you want to plug anything before we go? Where can people find you online?
I'm not going to plug anything, but if people want support in speaking and they want to go to our website and see that we run a couple of courses for professional speakers to be better speakers and professional speakers to be more professional, they can go on our website, which is nigelrisner.com. If they want to look at my book on communication called It's a Zero Around Here, delighted. If they mention your name, we'll do a 20% discount.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. Much appreciated, pleasure. Nigel. So I hope that you found that really useful. I certainly learned a ton of stuff from Nigel. And one of the things I'm going to take away is having a great opening line to help you get over that initial fear. But what I want to do before I go is just to try and grab hold of some of those things that he did identify during the chat that we had that are specifically around the fear that people might have around public speaking. And what I want to do is just sort of take that and help you to apply that to the mantras that we share with you as part of the technique that you can get free from our website so that you can just eliminate this stuff out of your life now. Nigel did mention a 5-minute phobia cure during the talk, and he was referring to some NLP techniques. But what we can do with our 5-step process is just get rid of it, not get you into a pleasant enough state for you to be able to cope, but actually just get it out of your life. Who needs this stuff, right? Public speaking is not going to kill you. So what you need to do is take some of this stuff that maybe the stuff that might have applied to you. So things like maybe the fear of uncertainty or not being in control or your need to be perfect or to be good enough or your fear of looking silly, those kind of things. You can take those and stick them straight into our mantras as part of our 5-step process. And immediately you can start relieving yourself of that kind of head trash so that it isn't affecting you and your ability to be a great speaker. So hopefully that will give you an inkling as to the kind of things that you need to look out for in your own experience and how you feel about doing public speaking or speaking in front of an audience or maybe speaking to a group of people that are maybe above you in the organisation that make you feel slightly intimidated, that kind of thing. Whatever might be coming up for you, you can literally take that and apply it to our 5-step process. So hopefully this has been useful for you. If you have any questions, you know where I am. You can come and jump on the Facebook page and I'll be right there answering your questions. Or you can email me hello@headtrash.co.uk and I will be back to you in a flash because I really want to help you to get rid of your head trash and be happier and more awesome than you already are. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast or any of the previous podcasts, please, please, please do come and leave me a review on iTunes because we've been doing really, really, really well in the charts. We're regularly in the top 5 and I'm sure that's down to the reviews that we've been getting. So I'd love to stay, hit number 1 a little bit more times and stay in the top 5 more regularly. So if you could please leave me a review, that would be absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. Until next time, bye for now. You've just been listening to Alexi Leachman here on The Head Trash Show. If you enjoyed the show, I'd really appreciate you leaving a review here on iTunes. And don't forget to pop over to headtrash.com to get your copy of our free 5 Steps to Clearing Head Trash guide. So now stay tuned for upcoming episodes and more tips and how-tos for clearing your head trash and reclaiming your headspace. Until next time, bye for now.